From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, President Obama has a warning for Iran.
We're not sending them obscure messages. We send them very direct messages about it.
France foils a plot against churches. Soul searching in Sudan after medical students join Islamic State. And the World Health Organization says millions of children are at risk of illness. It's all ahead for you. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. President Obama has warned Iran not to send weapons to the Shiite Houthi rebels in Yemen that could destabilize the region. Appearing on the cable television program MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews late Tuesday, Mr. Obama referenced an Iranian convoy in the vicinity of the Arabian Peninsula and the presence of 9 U.S. warships to maintain open shipping lanes.
Right now, their ships are in international waters. There's a reason why we keep some of our ships in the Persian Gulf region, and that is to make sure that we maintain freedom of navigation. And what we've said to them is that if there are weapons delivered to factions within Yemen that could threaten navigation, that's a problem. And we're not sending them obscure messages. We send them very direct messages about it. My hope is generally that we can settle down the situation in Yemen. Ultimately, when it comes to the seas, we are obviously the dominant force, and we're coordinating closely with all of our allies in the region, sending a message that rather than another conflict in the region, we need to settle this down. Part of our goal as the world's leading superpower is to work with partner countries to try to resolve conflicts, to be ruthless in going after terrorism. But we're not going to do that by ourselves, and we're not going to do it just by deploying more Marines in every country that has these problems. We got to build up their capacity in these areas so that they're not recruiting centers and safe havens for terrorist activity. I think the Islamic world is going through a process where they have to isolate and push out the kind of extremism that we've seen expressed by ISIL. And that's a generational project. What our job is, in the meantime, is to make sure that we are protecting Americans, we're protecting our interests, that we're maintaining things like freedom of navigation, and that we're partnering with the best elements of those communities in order to be successful. It's going to take some time, but I remind people that there actually is probably less war and less violence around the world today than there might have been 30, 40 years ago.
Mr. Obama's remarks came after Saudi Arabia announced an end to a 4-week bombing campaign aimed at slowing the advance of the Houthi rebels in Yemen to focus more on political solution to the crisis. The White House and Iran both welcomed the announcement. Later, the Saudis resumed its airstrikes. Stephen Zunes, a Middle East analyst at the University of San Francisco, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, changes in the Saudi strategy do not necessarily mean Riyadh is achieving its goals.
There seems to be little to back up the claim of successes. Indeed, the Houthis control more territory now than when the bombing campaign began a month ago. Ironically, their few defeats and their rather spectacular offensive across the country, well beyond their tribal base, was in places like Taiz, where the residents of the city rose up without weapons and basically blocked the entrances and made it clear they weren't welcome. The bombing campaign seems to have done little of strategic effect, but it has created an enormous humanitarian crisis, of which there's been growing criticism both within Yemen and internationally, and that may, more than anything, have been what has led to this ceasefire.
What do you anticipate this new phase of the Saudi campaign combining political, diplomatic, and military pressure may look like?
It's hard to say because it's a very complex situation. You have the former authoritarian ruler Saleh effectively allying with his old enemies, the Houthis, against his old allies, the Saudis. You have Al-Qaeda and other extremist Salafi groups gaining ascendancy as the Yemeni army and the Houthi rebels who had been fighting them have been shooting at each other. Neglected in all this is Yemeni civil society that is really the best hope for the country, but has unfortunately been hunkered down trying to survive while the shooting goes on and the bombing goes on all around them.
Stephen, the White House on Tuesday said it welcomed Saudi Arabia's announcement. We continue to support the resumption of a UN-facilitated political process. Will the UN now try to interject a greater presence in the Yemeni crisis?
Well, certainly, given the humanitarian catastrophe that past month of fighting has brought upon Yemen, which is by far the poorest country in the Arab world, necessitates some kind of international presence to try to resolve the underlying issues in the conflict. However, if it just becomes another deal between various armed factions and ambitious political figures and doesn't include the broad-based pro-democracy movement that led to the ouster of Saleh in 2011 and has unfortunately been sidelined in the efforts by the Saudis, the United States, and others to put together a post-Saleh regime, I'm afraid we could see ourselves sliding back into violence again.
Zun says while Iran would like to take advantage of the chaos in Yemen to advance its own interests, he questions the extent of influence Iran has over the Houthis. And he says exchanging one strongman, Ali Abdullah Saleh, for another, Abdrabu Mansour Hadi, in 2012 was a mistake. Yemen's future, he said, is tied to a government that has the support of the people and brings them both stability and economic hope. For another view on the Yemen conflict, VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy spoke with Gregory Gauz, head of the International Affairs Department at Texas A&M University.
Professor Gauz, few hours after Saudi-led campaign ended in Yemen, Houthis and their allies are not showing any sign of compromising or will to implement the United Nations Security Council resolution. Is there any way out of this conflict?
I think that the only way out of this conflict, as it stands now, is a return to negotiations, because it doesn't seem to me that either side can win militarily. The Houthis apparently can't win without air cover, and the Saudis can't win, and their supporters in Yemen can't win without more ground troops. And that doesn't seem to be coming for either side. I think that we might be hitting a stalemate.
With the ground option receding after Pakistan turned down a Saudi request to send troops, and Egypt seems in no rush to send soldiers into Yemen, what are the other possible scenarios in Yemen?
I think that it's unlikely that we're going to get a political solution that stabilizes Yemen, and I think it's unlikely that we're going to get a military victory that's so complete by one side in Yemen that order is restored from the top. I think it's highly likely that what we're going to see in Yemen is a continuation of authority, real authority, devolved down to local groups, Houthis, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, tribal groups, and other armed elements in Yemen. That's not that unusual in Yemen. Yemen has really never had a very strong central government. But I think that what we'll probably see is de facto division of the country, but no official political settlement of the conflict.
But some experts say that the Saudi-led coalition started with no clear political or military objective. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it started with some clear objectives, but an inability to achieve them. I think the clear objective was to drive the Houthis back, if not all the way to Sana'a, perhaps even further up to Sada'a. But that could not be done simply from the air. And I think that it wasn't so much the objectives that weren't clear. I think it was the inability to bring to bear the necessary military power to achieve them. I think that at this point, the best outcome for the Saudis would have to be some kind of negotiation that renews the national dialogue, that brings President Hadi back into Yemen, and that leads to a Houthi withdrawal, at least to Sana'a.
Final question. For the U.S., Yemen presents a breeding ground for terrorists and offers Iran an opportunity to extend its influence as it did before in Lebanon. What are the U.S. options in Yemen?
I don't think the U.S. has many options in Yemen in that I don't think there's much the U.S. can do to try to rebuild some kind of acceptable state authority in Yemen. The U.S. has never been that involved in the internal politics of Yemen. The Saudis have always been the external power that's had the most influence in Yemen. But I think from the point of view of the U.S., Yemen has always been considered as a side issue to larger issues. And I think that the larger issue now is the reassurance of Saudi Arabia and other Arab allies in light of the Lausanne Agreement that the U.S. is not going to abandon them. And I think that's why the United States so strongly supported the Saudi offensive in Yemen.
Gregory Gause, head of the International Affairs Department at Texas A&M University.
I'm Neil Arcega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
More than 3 months after the Paris terrorist attacks, French authorities say they have foiled yet another plot, this time targeting one or more churches near the French capital. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
France's Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve says police have arrested a 24-year-old French-Algerian IT student who's suspected of being an Islamist extremist. The man was taken into custody on Sunday. It's not immediately clear why the authorities made the announcement on Wednesday.
Dimanche matin à Paris, dans le 13e arrondissement, la police a découvert dans le véhicule.
Cazeneuve says police discovered an arsenal of weapons in his car parked in a Paris neighborhood. He said they also discovered documents showing the suspect allegedly planned on carrying out an attack on one or two churches in the Paris suburb of Villejuif. Police were reportedly alerted when the man called an ambulance after he apparently shot himself in the leg. He's also suspected in the killing of a woman who was found shot dead in her car in Villejuif. News reports say police are questioning his family. Cazeneuve says the man has been on the police radar for some time because he planned to leave for Syria. Hundreds of French youth have headed to Syria and Iraq in recent months to join extremist groups.
Notre pays, comme d'autres, encore ces dernières semaines, fait face à...
In a statement, French Prime Minister Manuel Valls said France, like other nations, is facing an unprecedented terrorist threat that the country must face with lucidity and determination. Thousands of police and soldiers are guarding synagogues, media outlets, and other sensitive sites around France since the January terrorist attack that killed 17 people around Paris. The shootings targeted Jews, the media, and the police. Analyst Frédéric Ancel said the foiled church plot has shifted the focus on Christians as targets.
Les églises en particulier sont considérées comme le saint ou ont été considérées pendant très longtemps.
Ancel told France Info Radio that today's radical Islamists have revived old views of churches as symbols of Western imperialism and meddling, regardless of their denomination. A recent video, allegedly made by the Islamic State group and showing the executions of Ethiopian Christians in Libya, has shocked the world. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In March, a group of British Sudanese medical students abandoned their studies in Khartoum and took off in secret to join the Islamic State militant group in Syria. VOA's Gabe Joselow reports the school is now re-examining what went wrong and what can be done to prevent radicalization on campus.
The group of four medical students and five companions started their journey to jihad at the University of Medical Sciences and Technology in Khartoum. The prestigious institution, set on a breezy, tree-covered campus in the center of the city, hosts 4,000 students, many from abroad, and has no reputation for religious extremism. For Ahmed Babakar, dean of students at the university, it remains a bit of a mystery how this group of current and former students was drawn to Islamic State.
The kids are very, very smart kids, very polite, very young. Most of them, they have British passport, and... We from outside, we learn from the lesson here in the university. We try to know how these students were recruited, how they are influenced in the campus.
Signs of the students' changing views began about 2 years ago, according to a friend of three women in the group. The friend, who declined to give his name, said he noticed the women were dressing more conservatively and had stopped shaking hands when greeting men. They also began preaching, urging other Muslim women to become more religious. An Islamic Civilization Society also began operating on the campus. The women's friend and other acquaintances say the society was hosting speakers with extremist views. Dean Babakar acknowledges that in previous years, some radical sheikhs were known to have given talks at the university.
Some of them started in campus, but usually it's a policy of my office to send some of my assistants to follow what these sheikhs are saying. so that if they are deviating from some talk, if they are propagating for some jihadist ideas, we can stop them. And this is what we did in the last 2 years.
Babaker said the Islamic Civilization Society continues to operate on campus, but the university now keeps a closer eye on its activities. The students who left to join Islamic State are believed to have gone to Syria to work as medics and not necessarily to fight for the extremist group. The university says it is working together with the students' families, trying to get them to return to Khartoum.
Definitely. We feel very sorry for them. We think they have been cheated, they have been brainwashed, they have been influenced heavily because they are very young, they are very innocent, they're coming with very little background about Islamic culture, real Islamic culture, because they have been brought in the West.
The Islamist group has recruited thousands of foreign fighters in its battle to establish a caliphate to rule Iraq and Syria by religious decrees and laws. According to the British-based International Center for the Study of Radicalization, up to 600 IS recruits have come from Britain, along with about 100 Sudanese. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Khartoum.
The framework nuclear deal between Iran and global powers has opened up new investment possibilities in an economy that has been stunted by international sanctions. Last week, a top Iranian atomic energy official said, in addition to Russia, China will also help it build additional nuclear power plants. VOA's Bill Ide has details from Beijing.
China has not commented on the proposal, but Iran says Beijing could help it build at least three nuclear plants in the coastal city of Bashir. The city is home to Iran's first nuclear plant, the construction of which began four decades ago. Germany started work there in the 1970s, but that effort was halted during Iran's Islamic Revolution. After that, Russia took over in the 1990s, but it was not until 2013 the plant was operating at full capacity. Oil-rich Iran says it needs nuclear power to meet its energy needs. Uranium fuels nuclear reactors, but also can be used to make nuclear bombs. Iran and world powers are seeking to reach final agreement on a deal by late June. Limbo Chang, the director of the China Center for Energy Economic Research at Xiamen University, says China is well-positioned to be a key player in Iran's nuclear energy program. Lin says China has great strength when it comes to the construction of power plants, given that most of the new plants being built in the world today are in China. He says the export of nuclear energy is also something that is essential to the transitioning of the Chinese economy. Late last year, the International Atomic Energy Agency for the first time approved a Chinese-designed reactor, giving it the green light for domestic production as well as exports. Last week, the Chinese government approved the construction of the country's first third-generation nuclear reactor, the Hualong 1. China is trying to build up its own brand of reactors, says Matthew Conti, a research analyst with the International Institute for Strategic Studies Non-Proliferation and Disarmament Program.
The Hualong 1 is currently being built in China, but it's going to take a while before the international community kind of has that trust in a new reactor type that hasn't actually been built anywhere else.
Analysts say that first reactor could take 6 to 8 years to build, but China is already exporting the technology abroad. Chinese media say a power station under development in Karachi, Pakistan, could be the first Hualong 1 built outside China. And Argentina also has agreed on a deal to build one in the South American country. Beijing also has a bilateral deal with Romania and a potential deal with Turkey. If China carries through on building reactors in Iran, it could partner with another foreign country to mitigate the political risk of such a sensitive project. Victor Gao is director of the China National Association of International Studies.
Whether China will be the only country in such cooperation or whether the Chinese involvement in such nuclear power construction will be in a kind of like a consortium together with the French companies, for example, is not yet clear.
China is already eyeing multinational deals to help it break into lucrative foreign markets that could be wary of partnering solely with Beijing. Analyst Matthew Cotty points to a nuclear power project in Britain that may use Chinese financial backing and French designs.
If the reactor is built at Hinkley Point in Somerset in the UK, that will be potentially involving some Chinese funding. But if you look at the memorandum of understanding between UK and China, then it kind of paves the way for potential Chinese indigenous technology to actually be constructed in the UK.
On Tuesday, President Barack Obama proposed a 30-year agreement to cooperate with China on nuclear power. If approved by the U.S. Congress, the deal would allow the transfer of material, reactors, components, and technology between the two countries. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
The World Health Organization warns that millions of children are at risk of illness, disability, and death because they are not getting vaccinated against preventable killer diseases. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva that in advance of World Immunization Week, the UN agency is urging nations to increase efforts to keep their children healthy by getting them immunized.
The World Health Organization warns progress toward the UN's goal of 90% global vaccination coverage is stalling. It says one in five children worldwide is missing out on routine life-saving immunization. Data for 2013 show nearly 22 million infants miss getting their required three doses of diphtheria and tetanus pertussis vaccines. Many of these children are living in the world's poorest countries. WHO Director of Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals, Jean-Marie Okwobele, says the plateau in vaccination rates carries terrible consequences. He says about 1.5 million children are dying prematurely from preventable diseases each year. He says one way to remedy this is by integrating immunization with other health services.
We have data that show that up to 40% of children who are seen at health clinics for various reasons would go out without being checked for their vaccination status, without being vaccinated when they should have been vaccinated. So correcting these, what we call missed opportunities for vaccination, is for us a key action to improve immunization coverage rates.
WHO says reasons for low vaccination coverage include lack of access to health services, insufficient number of healthcare workers, inadequate supply of vaccines, and insecurity. The UN agency says 35 countries have an immunization coverage rate below 80%. Most of the unvaccinated children are in just six countries: India, Pakistan, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, and Afghanistan. Dr. Okwobele tells VOA that officials in these countries know they have to do better and are making efforts to improve immunization.
I mentioned India, truly using the asset that they have, that they've driven the polio eradication program now in support of routine immunization. So we may have already seen some improvements, but the data for 2014 has yet to come in. Pakistan, I said it, we were there. Fantastic. I mean, in terms of planning today and what they will be doing. Nigeria, we have evidence that coverage has improved.
WHO estimates immunizations prevent between 2 and 3 million deaths annually and protect many more people from illness and disability. It notes there are new life-saving vaccines against diarrhea and pneumonia and reports the development of vaccines to protect adolescents and adults against influenza, meningitis, and cervical and liver cancers. Health officials urge nations to build upon these successes and not to become lulled into a sense of false security. They also note that measles and other diseases are spreading in the United States, Canada, and Europe because some parents have stopped immunizing their children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you for joining us today for International Edition. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. You can also listen to the show again if you like by going to the Programs tab and scrolling to International Edition. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington.